You want Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's gets it. We checked the calendar, and Christmas is coming early. $99 is all you need to grab your favorite select 7-foot pre-lit artificial Christmas tree for the holiday season. And don't sweat what gifts to get Dad, because we've got up to 40% off select tools and accessories. That's how Lowe's celebrates Black Friday early. Selection varies by location while supplies last.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts to listen to our episodes early and ad-free and get access to monthly exclusive episodes. Go to patreon.com/madnesspod. You can also hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts for ad-free episodes. We've got links in our show notes.
The opinions expressed in the following episode do not necessarily reflect those of the Minds of Madness podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
How many grains of sand does it take to make a heap? One grain by itself is insignificant. Add another, and still, it's nothing but a pair of grains. But at some point, as you keep piling one grain on top of the other, what was once insignificant becomes something. It becomes a heap. This thought experiment is what's called the paradox of the heap, tackling the subjective nature of our observations and conclusions. In the realm of chance and certainty, this is a delicate balance between the impossible, the possible, the plausible, and the likely. We live in a world where highly improbable things do happen. Events so rare, we call them freak accidents. A lightning strike, a winning lottery ticket, a pipe flying off a truck and crashing through a windshield. Rare, yes, but not impossible. We accept that one in a million, or even one in a billion events can and do occur, even if they're hard to fathom. But what happens when you pile one rare event on top of another? When do a series of improbabilities begin to stretch the limits of believability? This was the case in the mysterious death of Barbara Kendhammer, a devoted mother and wife killed in a freak accident, causing injuries inconsistent with the explanation given by her husband. Join me now as we examine the strange death of Barbara Kendhammer, a loving mother whose life ended under bizarre and tragic circumstances. You'll hear how such an unimaginable misfortune, as described by Barbara's husband, led to investigators uncovering troubling inconsistencies that cast doubt on his story and raised serious questions. Randall Erler was running late for work on Friday, September 16th, 2016. He was scheduled to arrive at the job site to install drywall at 8 a.m., but found himself 2 or 3 minutes behind. The job site was located at a rural home on Bergen Coulee Road, just outside West Salem, Wisconsin. It had been a dreary morning, with overcast skies and a light mist hanging in the air. But Randall, an avid hunter, saw it as an opportunity to roll his windows down and keep his body acclimated to the outdoor conditions. As he turned onto Bergen Coulee Road, Randall noticed a dark gray sedan stuck in a ditch off to his right. It looked as if the vehicle had accidentally backed into the ditch.
My windows were down. When I saw the vehicle there, I looked to see if there was somebody that was trying to do the Y-turn that I could help, maybe just pull the car out with my truck. It's a 2004 Chevy Silverado, four-wheel drive. As I looked in through the windshield as I was going by at about 4 to 5 miles an hour, I could see the passenger door was open. I saw it through the windshield. As I was just driving by, I could see the passenger was open, so I thought maybe there was two people in the vehicle, if they were just walking. So I didn't see anyone, so I went up to the job site.
Driving by, Randall didn't see anyone near the car or any visible damage on the car, bumper, or windshield. So Randall continued on to his job site, arriving at 8:04 a.m. About 10 minutes later, he heard sirens approaching Burgum Coulee. 2 days later, Randall received an unexpected call from the police. What Randall had seen that day would become a key piece of evidence in a murder investigation. You see, by the time those sirens and first responders arrived at the sedan in the ditch, there was somebody at the car site. 46-year-old Todd Kendhammer and his wife of 25 years, Barbara Kendhammer. One of them was covered in blood. The other was barely clinging to life. Todd and Barbara were lifelong locals to the area, both born in La Crosse, Wisconsin, just 12 days apart in 1970. Throughout their childhood, the future husband and wife attended different local schools. But during Todd's junior year of high school, their paths would cross for the first time.
I met Barb in 1986 at her brother's wedding. He married my cousin, and Barb was at her junior prom, and she came in with a couple of her friends. And when she walked in, I went to my cousin Rhonda and asked her who it was. There was something, just the way she was. I talked to her a little bit. It was a picture book thing. I mean, just one of these things where you know immediately, that's the girl you want. That's the girl I want to talk to. I want to get to know this girl. And that's the feeling that I had the first time I met Barb.
Much to Todd's dismay, he learned that Barbara already had a serious boyfriend.
I wasn't pursuing her as a girlfriend at the time. I wanted to get to know her, see who she was, how she was. I had a feeling that I wanted to, but I did not pursue it like that at first. Just hung out with her, did stuff together. We went mud bogging, we went four-wheeling, snowmobiling, walking, talking, go down to Riverside, a lot of stuff like that. We had a lot of stuff in common.
Todd spent the next 3 years stuck in the friend zone with Barbara. But after breaking up with her boyfriend following high school, sparks started to fly between Todd and Barbara. By the summer of 1990, Todd and Barbara were engaged and married the following August. And it wasn't long before they welcomed the births of their two children, Jessica and Jordan. Todd spent most of his life working in the glass installation and repair industry, beginning from the time he was 14. He bounced around between several different glass companies and even ran his own business for several years. But around 2007, Todd switched careers altogether and started working at a local beverage packing company. Because of his reputation for glasswork, Todd also continued doing automotive windshield replacements in his spare time. And whenever he needed an assistant to help him with a replacement, it was always Barbara who was right there beside him. In fact, whenever Todd wasn't in the factory, or Barbara wasn't working her job as a middle school lunch lady, Barbara was always right beside Todd. The couple did practically everything together. Along with fixing windshields, the couple had another side hustle, flipping houses.
We weren't out to get rich off it. It was more of a hobby to keep us together and do things together. And we would make a little bit of money off them, yes.
But it wasn't just doing projects together. Almost every non-working moment of their lives were intertwined.
I always got up with Barb when she was getting ready. I would always make her breakfast for her. I would take her to work, and when she got done with work, we'd always go get a little snack or something after work. And then we'd either go home, take a walk, go home, make supper, go home, mow lawn, go get ice cream, and we'd sit down, maybe take another walk after dinner, and then we'd just watch a little TV and go to bed. I always called her. I knew when her breaks were. So I would either take break when her breaks were and call her or text her, or when she got done with work, I'd always call her a little bit after 2 o'clock to see how her day was and talk and stuff. She always had a big dinner made when I got home. It wasn't ever frozen meal or like that. It was always something she loved to cook. Usually we'd take a walk, and then that would be our night. That was our usual routine.
According to friends and family, including their children, Todd and Barbara seemed like the perfect couple in every way. No one ever recalled the couple having a verbal fight, let alone a physical one. In fact, Todd absolutely doted on Barbara. Even when Todd was scheduled to do guy things, like deer hunting weekends with his friends, he never let himself be away from Barbara for long.
We'd go deer hunting Friday. We'd go over to the cabin, get a fire, make some dinner or something, drink a little beer, you know, whatever. Well, Friday night, I would go home for an hour or two, just talk to Barb, see how her day was. And if she had dinner, I'd eat a little bit with her. And then I'd go back over to deer camp. And then Saturday night, I would go home again. But I was away from her all day.
As you can imagine, this need to return to his wife each night subjected Todd to some gentle ribbing from his friends.
It was deer camp. I mean, I had to put the shoulder pads on. I got a lot of grief for it, but I did it for 25 years and never had a problem with it.
Even behind closed doors, Todd went above and beyond to please Barbara.
Barb was a real clean freak, and a big pet peeve of Barb's was when guys stood up to pee. And I respected her enough to sit down at home to pee for 25 years.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
Every single year, the Kentammers took an annual family camping trip to the Warrens Cranberry Festival.
Cranfest is a yearly event in Warrens, Wisconsin. It's thousands and thousands of craft people. There's different foods, but it's mainly all crafts. The whole town of Warrens shuts down for Cranfest. It's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday deal. And then every year Sunday, they have a big parade. Cranfest for us was a yearly thing. We went up the weekend before because we stayed in the county park. And if you didn't get up there beforehand, you wouldn't get a campsite. So we always went up the week before to set up camp and have the camper there, and we'd leave it all week.
On Friday morning, September 16th, 2016, the Kentammers were looking forward to their camping trip. But before they could leave, Barbara had to work her Friday shift in the lunchroom at West Salem Middle School, where she worked for the past 14 years. After breakfast, Barbara donned her Friday clothes, a school-colored polo that all the lunch staff wore on Fridays. At 7:45, Barbara and Todd left their home driving the family's gray sedan. As Todd drove, Barbara held on to her massive Bubba mug in the passenger seat, a 52-ounce stainless steel mug that she never went anywhere without. But instead of driving south to take Barbara to school, however, Todd turned north along County Road M.
We were going to take a quick jog over Highway M to the bottom of the M, or the Shufflebine Hill on the West Salem side, and see if we could find that blue Ford pickup.
According to Todd, he had a friend with a windshield that needed replaced on his F-250 pickup truck. It was supposed to be sitting at the end of the driveway with the keys inside. Todd's plan was to find the truck and drive it back to his house while Barbara drove the car into work.
We got in the car and headed down the road. We were headed over to Shufflebine Hill. We went down County C to Osmus Road to County M. It depends where it is. I mean, there's some sharp curves on it and stuff, but normally I do 55, 58. Because of the rain and the overcast and the fog, probably not so fast.
But then, in the blink of an eye, Todd's entire world shattered around him. According to him, he was driving past an oncoming flatbed truck when a 53-inch long galvanized steel pipe rolled off the bed and into his lane. At first, his brain couldn't comprehend what was flying through the air. His initial thought was that a bird was about to crash into his windshield. Todd says he reacted reflexively without thinking and leaned forward. He then lunged his hands into his own windshield, making a desperate attempt to protect Barbara in the passenger seat. He struck the inside of his windshield hard enough to crack the glass, almost breaking through entirely. But his effort wasn't enough to prevent a 10-pound projectile from crashing through the windshield and striking Barbara.
Everything happened so fast. After I lunged, the pipe come through the windshield. Barb started flailing and moving around. And I was to the Cooley Road, so I quick turned onto the Cooley Road. And I thought I put the car into park, but I apparently put it into reverse. And I ended up, that's how I ended up in the ditch the way I did.
He looked over and saw that Barbara was seriously injured. By the time the car came to a stop in the ditch, she'd stopped moving.
I remember getting out of the car. I walked around the back of the car. I opened her door, and she was leaning forward, and the door wouldn't stay open. It wanted to keep coming shut on me. I don't know how many times I tried to jar the door open. I couldn't get the door to stay open. I wanted to get Barb out. She wasn't moving at the time. I opened the door. The pipe was hanging there. The pipe was in the way. I reached under. I had to get rid of the pipe. So I don't know if I threw the pipe or set it down. I don't know what I did with the pipe, but I got it out of the way. I tried to reach under Barb to lift her out of the car, and I couldn't. It was on the incline in the mud and the door. I couldn't get under her to get her out. So I jarred the door open. I don't know how it stayed open, but it finally stayed open. And I got a hold of her. I got a hold of Barb, and I tried to pull her out, and something was caught. I tried to take her out. I think I tried to take her out nicely, but I couldn't get her out. Something caught. So I gave a tug. And when I did, we fell backwards. And she landed on me, and I rolled her off of me. And I started doing CPR on her.
According to Todd and Barbara's cell phone data, the accident had taken place sometime between 8 and 8.02 a.m. 3 minutes later, at 8.05, Todd frantically called 911. When first responders arrived, they found Todd and Barbara in the ditch beside their car. Todd was clearly distraught. It was clear that Barbara had suffered a massive injury. Her face was covered in blood, she had no pulse, and she wasn't breathing. When police arrived, Todd was asked to step away from the scene, as the responders needed room to work. While speaking with the officers, Todd explained what happened.
The county guy comes here, he'll take over, and then I'm going to go look for that pipe, okay?
I pulled it out of the windshield.
You pulled it out of the windshield?
It's sitting right beside the car.
Okay. Wait for this.
I got to see if she's okay.
Well, just wait. Let them do their work, okay? Let them do their work. Let them do their work. Mike, this is Todd Kenhammer. He was driving the car. He said he was coming up M. A pipe fell off a vehicle or a trailer, went through the window and hit her in the head or somewhere in that area. So I'm going to go look for the pipe.
I got it.
It
was in the windshield.
First responders worked desperately to save Barbara's life. After getting her into an ambulance, they were successfully able to reestablish her pulse using medication. She was alive, but barely. A detective offered to give Todd a ride to the hospital. His body cam was still on.
And it was an older, like a bigger flatbed-looking truck.
What color was the cap?
I don't even remember. It was darker. That's all I know, dark green or dark blue,
okay.
Black. And looked up and I'd seen the thing coming. And
okay.
I don't know if I tried to stop it or what I tried to do, but I reached out for it and it hit her. And I didn't think it hit her at first. I hit the windshield with the dick of my hand, and she started flailing really bad. So I quick turned into here, and I was trying to stop the car, and I was trying to pull the pipe, get the pipe away from her, and I hit the damn thing in reverse, and that's how I ended up in the ditch.
So then the truck just kept going down?
I don't even think he knew he lost it. I didn't give him no info.
Did you actually see it coming off the flatbed?
Did I?
Yeah.
I seen it when it started coming off. I mean, it rolled off and was headed right, I mean...
Okay. What else was he hauling?
I didn't see. I didn't even look at the truck. I honestly wasn't looking.
Okay.
It had like, he had a bunch of stuff in there, I'm sure, because it was taller up.
Okay.
He had some sides, like, you know, metal sides on it.
Okay.
Just like it comes rolling off, just like straight.
Okay.
And it looked like a bird. And I mean, okay. I don't know why. I don't know why I did it.
Did what?
I reached out to try to grab it.
Okay. With both hands?
Yeah.
I said, okay.
When the detective asked where Todd and Barbara were going, Todd explained about picking up the pickup truck. According to him, his friend, who he identified as Justin Heim, knew Todd was coming to pick up the truck. In his statements to police, Todd told them that Barbara was scheduled to work that morning at 8:30 a.m., After driving Todd to the hospital, the detective dropped him off so he could be with the rest of his family at Barbara's side. But as the day continued, Barbara's condition deteriorated. The next morning, she was pronounced dead.
I just talked to her and held her hand and gave her a kiss. And I told her that I loved her too. And I'd always take care of her mom, because Barbara and I knew each other so well that we didn't say I love you and I love you, because we always said it together, so it was always a love you too. And whenever we'd text or something, that was always what it was. I didn't want to go home without Barb there. I went to my mom's house.
Despite Todd's story of a freak highway accident, detectives approached the investigation as a potential homicide. Barbara's wounds didn't match Todd's account. Instead of a violent primary wound to her face, neck, or chest from a pipe strike, her worst injuries were 3 deep lacerations on the back of her head. Todd had scratch marks on his neck and severe cuts on his knuckles, which he claimed was from punching his windshield to protect Barbara. Obviously, detectives found this explanation hard to believe. I mean, just ask yourselves, have any of you ever punched your own windshield? Because as Todd claimed, you thought a bird was flying towards your windshield. Is this reaction plausible, or even possible?
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityCairo.com. That's AbilityCairo.com.
CODA salutes those who served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.
Detectives processed the scene, collected evidence, and set about finding the truth about what really happened that morning. They reviewed security footage from a nearby horse farm, which showed Todd and Barbara's vehicle passing at 7:57 a.m., but they never saw the dark-colored flatbed truck Todd claimed was involved in the accident. The pipe that allegedly struck Barbara was found on the ground beside the vehicle. Although no blood was observed anywhere on the pipe, they saw that one end was covered in rust-colored dirt. Traces of a similar dirt were found on the passenger seat and, surprisingly, inside the trunk. A blade of grass matching the ditch vegetation was found poking out of the closed trunk, suggesting it had been opened after the car went off the road. Was it possible that the pipe came from the car's trunk and not from an oncoming truck? Inside the car, glass shards covered the passenger seat and floor, but none were on the door's map pocket, indicating the door was open when the window broke. 2 days later, the witness, Randall Erler, told police that when he passed the Kenthammers' car, the windshield was intact, and neither Barbara nor Todd were visible at the time, begging the obvious question, where were they? When forensic pathologist Kathleen McCubbin performed Barbara's autopsy a few days later, she'd already seen the police reports and Todd's account of what had happened. But when she examined the body, she saw a very different story.
We can see that there was a 1-inch bruise or contusion, sort of the left upper forehead region. Then there was a 1-inch laceration on the middle part of her forehead. Then there was a 1/4-inch pink-purple bruise that was sort of between the eyebrows. Now, around both eyes, there was bleeding that can collect around the eyes. And you tend to see that sometimes when you have injuries, for instance, of the nose or forehead, and the blood seeps around the eyes, giving you that raccoon eye appearance. When I examined her nose, I could feel that there were palpable fractures in the nasal bones. On the left temple, I noted that there was a 1/4-inch abrasion or scrape.
Along with the injuries to Barbara's face, there was a constellation of bruises on her chest, arms, legs, and extremities. But the most serious injuries were found on the back of her head.
There were 3 lacerations on the back of the head, or what we call the occiput, kind of the back lower portion of the head. There was 1 on the left side that was 3/4-inch, and then there were 2 on the right side that were right next to each other. I did not see anything with a curvilinear pattern to suggest that the end of the pipe struck her forehead or nose.
She also examined the possibility that Barbara had ducked her head forward, exposing the back of her head to the pipe impact.
I also think that if a pipe was traveling with great force and struck the back of the head, if you're going to say that these were all from the pipe, then it would have to be traveling sort of tangentially across the back of the head. And I believe that in that situation, it would actually avulse the tissue because the intense energy of the pipe traveling at that speed into the back of the head would cause worse damage than just these few lacerations.
Beneath one of these lacerations to the back of her head, the pathologist discovered a skull fracture. There were also severe injuries found on Barbara's neck.
the cricoid cartilage was fractured, and there were multiple fracture portions on the front of the ring. Cricoid fractures can be seen in either compression of neck, such as manual strangulation, where there's intense pressure on the cricoid. They can be seen in blunt impact injuries.
The pathologist examined all these injuries to form her professional opinion. Barbara had died from blunt force trauma to the neck and head, but not the way Todd had described.
I did not see any impact site on the body to me, such as what you would expect to see if a pipe was coming through at a high rate of speed and impacting the body. I would expect there would have been much more devastating injuries. Looking at the totality of the injuries, looking at the injuries on multiple sides of the head, the three lacerations on the back of the head is particularly concerning to me because I don't feel that that's likely consistent with the pipe striking the back of the head. I don't see an alternative mechanism that I feel would be consistent with causing that injury in this scenario.
The findings of the autopsy confirmed the detective's suspicions, and when they began looking into the other details surrounding Todd's story, their suspicions grew even deeper. On the day before Barbara's funeral, Todd received a phone call from detectives asking him to come down to the police station for an interview. What Todd didn't know was that police had followed up on Todd's story and knew that some of it, at least, simply wasn't true. One of the first things detectives wanted to understand was Todd's story about what he and Barbara were intending to do that morning. Before the interrogation, police had spoken with Justin Heim, the man Todd claimed had arranged to have his windshield repaired, but Justin flatly denied any such arrangement had ever been made.
Where were you guys going?
I was going over to talk to a guy I work with. I ordered a windshield for him about a month ago. Mm-hmm. And my wife has been after me to get it out of my garage. It's sitting in my garage.
So what's his name?
Justin Heimer. There's always somebody's buddy or somebody that needs a windshield.
I talked to Justin.
Okay.
He had never had you do any work for him. And then he told me that there wasn't a windshield order. He didn't talk to you. He hadn't seen you in about a month.
Are you guys insinuating that I did this to my wife?
I'm not insinuating anything at this point. I'm saying that...
I'm not changing my story. I'm 100%.
I'm not saying you are.
I'm 100%.
Todd then changed his story, claiming the truck he was going to get didn't belong to Justin, but to a friend of Justin's instead.
Whose house was it at?
I don't know what a guy's name.
So you're going to go look for a truck that's parked at an unknown person's house that might be over the backside of Shufflebine Hill, and if the keys are in it, you're going to take it?
Really? I do it all the time. I've done it for 26 years.
So for 26 years, you'll have somebody call you and say, "Hey, I got a windshield for you to fix. It's my buddy's. Go pick it up at his house." That's not plausible. You know that's not plausible.
Todd would later identify this friend of Justin's as a man named Ben Path. But when detectives followed up on this name later, Ben also denied asking Todd to replace his windshield. Detectives also didn't overlook the fact that the entire reason Barbara was in the car at all was because she was on her way to work that morning. So they asked Todd if the school was okay with Barbara coming in late for work.
But sometimes she doesn't have to go to kind of lax on the time that she shows up for work. Does she have to call somebody and report that? Or?
No, if she's not there by 8:30, then she has to be... If she's not ready by 8:30, then she's got to call and let him know.
Okay.
If it's going to be after 8:30.
The detectives, however, had already discovered that Barbara started her school shifts promptly at 8 a.m., not 8:30. Which meant at the time of the accident, even if they'd turned around immediately, Barbara would have been running at least 10 minutes late for her shift. And another thing they learned, Barbara was never late for work. And if she was, It was impossible to imagine she wouldn't have called in to alert them. She was so reliable, in fact, that by 8:02 a.m., the school was already calling Barbara's phone to see where she was. It was a phone call she never answered. When pressed for details on what happened after the pipe supposedly came through the windshield, Todd was uncertain, foggy, or couldn't remember almost any single detail. He didn't know exactly how he removed Barbara from the car. He couldn't remember removing her seatbelt. He couldn't describe where the pipe was inside the car, or why it was even necessary to remove it completely from the windshield. He didn't know why he hadn't called 911 immediately, and he couldn't explain the scratches on his neck, or recall if he'd opened up the trunk in the ditch. For almost every detail, Todd gave multiple possible explanations. But there was one thing he was entirely certain of. He'd never seen Randall Erler's truck drive by.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters. On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at COTA.com.
In the weeks that followed, investigators continued examining all the forensic evidence from the accident, and three major discoveries were made. First, no traces of blood were found on the pipe. Yet, despite there being no blood, Barbara's DNA was discovered on both ends of the pipe. In Todd's version of events, Barbara's DNA should have only been on the end that struck her. That is, if it had come from the bed of a pickup truck. But if the pipe had been in Barbara's trunk before the accident, as detectives suspected based on the rust-colored dirt they'd found, this would explain how her DNA was transferred to both ends of the pipe, touching other items that belonged to Barbara that she carried in her trunk. Second, a crime scene analyst studied the crack patterns on the windshield itself and discovered that right beside the hole the pipe had penetrated through was another smaller impact site that occurred just prior, and investigators had a theory of what it caused it. They believed it was Todd himself who punctured the windshield with the pipe to stage an accident scene, but this clearly had taken him two tries. One failed attempt, the first impact site, and a second attempt, the successful attempt when the pipe went through. And finally, lab results confirmed the presence of Todd's DNA beneath Barbara's fingernails. Todd had scratches on his neck. Detectives now believed they knew how he'd gotten them. On December 7th, 2016, Todd was arrested and charged with first-degree murder. He adamantly proclaimed his innocence. Despite Todd's arrest and the mounting case against him, practically every single one of his friends and family members believed Todd's claims of innocence. Having known Todd and Barbara as a couple for over 25 years, the idea that he'd ever harm, let alone murder his wife, was not only implausible, it was impossible. Likewise, for the state prosecutors, it was extremely difficult for them to even come up with a theory of motive. There was no evidence of an argument, marital problems, serious financial problems, or even discontent of any kind. Prosecutors also didn't have a specific explanation for Barbara's wounds. They contended that Todd had beaten her and strangled her to death using his fists, but it was also possible he'd bashed the back of her head into one of the car rims where the blood had been discovered. But the main point of their case was that it simply couldn't have happened the way Todd had described it. And if Todd was lying about what had happened that day, if it wasn't a freak pipe accident, then the only possible verdict was murder. When the trial began a year later in December 2017, almost no one in the courtroom audience was sitting behind the prosecutor's table. All of Todd and Barbara's friends and family were sitting behind Todd's defense table. The defense presented expert witnesses to explain how it all could have happened exactly the way Todd had described it.
I think the injuries here are entirely consistent with the accident as was described by Mr. Kentamer.
This is Dr. Dean Cook, an emergency room doctor presented as a witness by the defense.
Pipe's coming towards the windshield. It sets off a bit of a warning to you. Your instantaneous reaction to that is to try and get out of the way of that or to block it. You do one of the two things, and most people, the normal reaction is to duck. Now, he tries to hit the windshield. The windshield has a dent going outward, so he obviously had to have hit the windshield to make a dent go outward. She sees this coming. She ducks. That's the only thing she can really effectively do is try and duck. She goes to duck, gets as low as she can forward. Pipe comes in. First blow, the long laceration is the pipe. Stuff comes in, it moves. In this case, it doesn't have to go through you to do damage to you. It comes in right next to her. Bam, that's the blow that created the bleed in the brain and knocked her unconscious. Now you've got an unconscious person in a car that has likely got a swerve or two in it right at that point. Now that pipe, if I've turned, I can come back and I can hit it on an angle so I can have the second cut be at a 90 degree angle to the first one. This is a smaller cut, less force. Now she's flopped around and fallen down, and she's doing some seizure activity with this at this point because of the brain damage.
Basically, the doctor's contention was that once Barbara had been knocked unconscious, her head and body could have flopped around and struck the pipe repeatedly, which could possibly explain any number of the other wounds to her head and face. To explain the injuries to her neck, the defense also had an answer, claiming they were caused by Barbara's massive stainless steel coffee mug. When she leaned forward, exposing the back of her head, the impact of the pipe could have smashed her neck on the mug itself. Likewise, it may have smashed her face into the dash as well, causing her broken nose. Part of the mug lid was indeed chipped off. Upon cross-examination, the prosecution picked apart the doctor's theory, making it sound like the pipe and mug were JFK's magic bullet and the second shooter from the grassy knoll. But the final blow to the defense expert was a dramatic moment in the courtroom.
The long laceration is the harder blow, harder laceration, and that's the one I believe caused the major brain damage that occurred.
Okay. You're aware that under the left laceration is where the skull fracture was?
I have not reviewed this for the last week.
Take a second.
If the skull fracture is under the left, then that would have been the first blow. That would have been the hardest blow.
Which would be in this picture the bottom one?
Which in this picture would be the bottom one.
You're changing your testimony from direct when you said it was the right one.
Well, then I'm saying that the blow where the skull fracture occurred had to be the hardest blow. That would be impactively where you'd first have that.
The hardest blow
is likely to be the first blow when the pipe first came through.
I understand.
Okay.
Do you understand that that means that that would be the left side and not the right as you testified earlier?
I have my left and right off on what I was saying with this, but yes. Okay.
What did they say about a person who can't even tell their right from left? The prosecutor expertly dismantled almost every single defense witness in a similar fashion. Like another doctor of biomechanics, who doubted Todd could have rammed a pipe through the windshield using his bare hands.
Whether they could generate the force is another issue, I don't know.
To put a pipe through a windshield? You know they can, right?
Put a pipe through a windshield?
Dr. Bates, you know they can. Men have put rocks through windows, phones through windows,
And I've seen people try to penetrate a windshield and not succeed the first try.
Like in this case. Thank you. Objection.
Questions.
It's rare to get actual Perry Mason moments during a real trial, but getting a doctor to admit his entire theory was based on the wrong primary wound, and another doctor to confirm the state's case that a person might fail to puncture a windshield at the first try, were two big ones. But the biggest was yet to come. Todd Kendhammer spent 2 days on the stand, testifying in his own defense. During direct examination, he addressed the single biggest hole in his entire story. Where exactly were he and Barbara going on the morning of her death? His first alibi, Justin Heim, denied the windshield was for him. His second alibi, Ben Path, also denied it. But at trial, Todd finally remembered exactly whose truck it was he was going to retrieve that day.
I mentioned that I had this windshield I wanted to get rid of.
And what is it that today you can recall about that conversation?
Scott Torgerson had brought it up that he knew somebody, and he mentioned somebody.
Do you remember the name of the person he mentioned?
It was Jerry Logging.
Jerry Logging was a name that had never yet been mentioned in this case. On cross-examination, the prosecution pressed Todd on his newly created alibi.
You said that you were driving to look for a truck, but you really had no idea where the truck actually was.
I had an idea where it was, yes.
Did you ever talk to Jerry Logging about his truck?
No.
Do you know where Jerry Logging lives?
Not exactly, no.
So you were driving around looking for a person that you hadn't talked to and don't know where he lives, right?
Correct.
On a day that Barbara has to go to work?
Correct.
They also pressed him about the time that Barbara was supposed to start work that morning.
You told the police from the very start that Barb worked at 8:30, right?
I did tell him that, yes.
You lied about that too, right?
I didn't lie.
She didn't work at 8:30, right?
There were mornings she started at 8:30.
And in September, that entire school year so far, every day was 8 o'clock, right?
Yes.
And she couldn't just not show up at 8:30, right? She'd have to call.
If she was going to be significantly late, yeah.
Can you identify which day that fall she worked at 8:30?
No, I can't recall.
Well, there aren't any, are there? Can you show me a day in there where she worked at 8:30?
I can't show you a day that she worked at 8:30, no.
Is it possible Barb just didn't know for the first time that year she had to work at 8:30 instead of 8?
No.
On the day that she died, she didn't do the one thing that she always did.
Yes.
You don't find that odd?
I find a lot of things odd, yes.
You have no explanation for that, though?
I do not have an explanation for that, no.
After Todd's testimony, the prosecution called the surprise rebuttal witness. In a shock to the courtroom, they called Jerry Logging to the stand.
On County M, are you aware of where Burgum Cooley Road is?
Yes.
Would your residence be north or south of Burgum Cooley Road?
South.
And for people who might not be good with directions, that would be closer to West Salem?
Closer to West Salem.
The location of Jerry's house meant that Todd and Barbara had already driven past it when the supposed pipe accident occurred. But that wasn't the only bombshell.
Do you also own a truck?
Yes.
What kind of truck?
F-250 Super Duty.
What color is it?
Blue.
Where do you usually park that truck?
In the front yard.
And how close is that to the roadway?
50 yards at the most.
Where you park your truck, are you able to see that truck from the roadway as you drive?
Absolutely.
Had you talked to Mr. Kendhammer about fixing a windshield on that truck in 2016?
No.
Do you have two brothers that work at Crown Cork and Seal with Mr. Kendhammer?
Yes.
Did you talk to them at all about needing a windshield for that truck?
No.
In September of 2016, well, at any time in 2016, did you talk to Todd Kendhammer or anybody else about needing a windshield for your truck?
No.
That's all I have.
For the third time in as many tries, Todd's explanation for where he was going that morning turned out to be complete and utter fiction.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters. On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at COTA.com.
You waited somewhere between 3 and 5 minutes to call 911, and it's a long time. Think about what you can do in 3 minutes is a long time. That's a boxing round. How many punches can be thrown in 3 minutes? A lot. How much damage can be done in 3 minutes? A lot. How much time goes by in 3 minutes as you're trying to do CPR, not calling 911? If you were to find him not guilty, you would have to believe he was a victim of not only an accident that defies physics and all the physical evidence, but a series of incompetent law enforcement officers, an incompetent medical examiner, and an incompetent crime lab. And his stories of looking for a truck that belonged to a person that he didn't know where he lived, and didn't know how he was going to get the truck are true. And that Barb, for some unknown reason, was going to be late to work for the first time ever on the same day that she happened to be killed.
The case that Barbara was not killed in the way Todd described was overwhelming. But still, the prosecution was never able to establish any clear evidence of motive. Everyone in Todd and Barbara's lives described them as having a perfect marriage. What on earth could have made Todd snap like that then? The prosecution had a theory.
I also think the fact that everybody put so much pressure on Barb to have this perfect marriage, it becomes a little harder to tell people it's not perfect. When people put you up on a pedestal and talk about how, oh, he takes care of you, he holds your hand, he's always calling you, he's always texting you, he must really care about you, it's a little harder to give people some bad news and say maybe it's not all so rosy. When you look at the phone records that were shown by the defense and the text messages, we only saw a little bit, but there's a lot going in one direction. He would said drop her off at work. He'd call her at the first break. One of the texts said, call me when you get done with work. He would call her after work. He would come home from deer camp to be with her. At some point, the woman doesn't have a choice but to say she's in a happy relationship because he's always on her, always contacting her, always with her, and doesn't give her a breath. If this isn't a controlling relationship, I don't know what one would look like. He was constantly checking up on her, checking where she was. I don't think she had a choice but to be with him. And the people that are supporting Todd don't believe the physical evidence that's right in front of their eyes that we presented at trial. Why would they have believed Barb if she had said just verbally, there's a problem in our relationship? The people that put Todd on a pedestal and put their marriage on a pedestal, how would she have gone to them and said, you know, things aren't so good, or he doesn't give me the freedom that I want, or he is controlling? They wouldn't have believed her, and she would have gotten the backlash that you see now.
When the case was handed over to the jury, they returned a unanimous verdict 9 hours later.
State of Wisconsin versus Todd A. Kendhammer. We, the jury, find the defendant, Todd A. Kendhammer, guilty of first-degree intentional homicide as charged in the information.
During sentencing, a number of Todd's family members spoke on his behalf, all requesting the judge grant Todd the possibility of parole. But there was only one person who spoke on behalf of Barbara, an estranged cousin whom Barbara's children claim their mother didn't like very much.
As we watched the trial unfold, our hearts were broken when we learned there were seats saved for anyone who would sit in support of Barbara. But no one did. For the entire 9 days, all the while the seats in support of her murderer overflowed. They say Silence is violence. One cannot blame Barbara for not confiding in anyone about her fear for her safety. As we have sadly seen, who would have believed her? Who would have stood up for her? Many in Barbara's extended family did not come here during the trial out of disbelief. No one wants to believe that someone who professes to love you could also be capable of brutally beating you to death with their bare hands. The horror of knowing she suffered terribly while being strangled and having her skull fractured by her assailant is gut-wrenching. We cannot help but wonder, was she crying out? Was she begging for her life? We do know she was fighting and clawing to stay a dutiful daughter and sister, loving mother and grandmother, trusted co-worker and friend.
In the end, Todd was sentenced to life in prison and will be eligible for parole after 30 years when he's 77. Todd has spent the year since his trial fighting his case on appeal. His family even retained celebrity lawyer Jerry Buting to help. You might remember him as Stephen Avery's defense lawyer in the Netflix documentary Making a Murderer. In his appeal, a forensic pathologist stated that Barbara's wounds were likely caused exactly the way Todd originally described. A memory expert explained why Todd's lack of recall and various stories were consistent with severe mental trauma. They also discovered that in Todd's very first statement to police, he claimed that the pipe rolled off the truck, bounced off the road, and then struck the windshield. A more plausible, yet still highly unlikely scenario. Todd's original defense team had known this, but they chose not to present it at trial, feeling it was just one more example of Todd's ever-changing story about what had happened. Still, none of this can explain why Todd and Barbara were heading in the wrong direction on a morning Barbara was supposed to start work at 8 a.m. And none of it can explain how the flatbed truck the pipe allegedly rolled off magically disappeared between the accident and the surveillance footage only a mile away. The appeal claimed that Todd's original defense team was ineffective for not producing these other expert witnesses at trial. But in June 2024, the Wisconsin Court of Appeals disagreed, and Todd's appeal was denied. While it's highly unlikely we'll ever know exactly what happened to Barbara that day, there is one thing we know for sure. The life of a devoted mother, wife, and co-worker was tragically cut short at 46 years old, and her sudden, violent death left a community reeling and a family devastated. While the courts have rendered their verdict, the lack of clear motive continues to puzzle many. Barbara's story serves as a stark reminder of how quickly life can change, and how even the most seemingly perfect relationships can harbor unimaginable secrets. As years pass, it's crucial to remember Barbara not for how she died, but for the love and joy she brought to those around her. Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To support the show and get access to ad-free episodes, extra content, and Patreon-exclusive episodes, go to patreon.com/madnesspod. To find us on Instagram and Facebook, search The Minds of Madness, and on Twitter using the handle @madnesspod. And also, by checking out our sponsors and using our promo codes, you're also helping support the show. We've got all the links in our episode notes. So until next week, thanks for listening.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
It's Cybersecurity Awareness Month. LifeLock is here with tips to help protect your identity. Use strong passwords, set up multi-factor authentication, report scams, and update your software. And for comprehensive identity protection, LifeLock is your best choice. LifeLock alerts you to suspicious uses of your personal information and fixes identity theft, guaranteed, or your money back. Start your protection today with a 30-day free trial at LifeLock.com. Use promo code NEWS. Terms apply.
It's almost Election Day, Central Ohio, and your voice matters. On Tuesday, November 4th, COTA is making it easier to get to the polls with free rides all day long on all services. No fare, no hassle. Just hop on board on Tuesday, November 4th for an easy way to cast your vote. Whether you're taking the bus, COTA Mainstream, or COTA Plus, your ride is on us. Let's roll to the polls together. Plan your trip on the transit app or at COTA.com.